Well, do you want more joy in your life? I mean, I think I know the answer to the question. I haven't met a person yet that's like, nope, I've got a little too much joy. I've had enough. Over the last couple of weeks, during our Avoiding Grinchmas series, we've been exploring this idea of joy. How do we get it? How do we hold on to it when it's hard? And this week, we're gonna talk about some of the practical ways that we can share joy with others, the people around us, at work, at school, in our community, through our church. What an incredible privilege it is to be partnered up with God in the power of His Spirit, sharing this life-changing joy with the world around us. And so I want to welcome you to Cedar Creek. If we've never met, my name's Ben. I'm the lead pastor, and we are in one of our favorite seasons right now, the Christmas season. We're excited about our Christmas Eve services coming up not too far from right now. But this weekend, I'm excited for you because you're going to get to hear from your local campus pastor who loves you, loves serving you along with his staff team. And I'm excited about the word from God that they have to offer each of you. And so will you please put your hands together to welcome to the stage your campus pastor.
Let's go. I love when we get to do this. I absolutely love it. Thank you so much. So I want to start today by asking you a question. Have you ever had to learn something the hard way? I love that response. Like, yeah, we all have, right? And while I do believe it is one of the best ways to learn something, it's also pretty painful, right? So I would much rather learn from other people's screw-ups, right? So do you have a family member, a coworker, a best friend, a neighbor, somebody that you have seen make a mistake that you were able to learn from? If the answer is yes, you know that that's a much easier way to learn a valuable life lesson. And so I've got this family member that I wanted to talk about today, and it's kind of hard. I'm not going to tell you his name because he's not going to be here, but I've been able to learn so much from this guy just by watching. See, he's an incredibly successful businessman. He has made a lot of money, and he has like everything that he could ever want. So for you, like, think about the thing that if you had the money, the disposable income to go out and buy it right now, what would it be? Like, he's the kind of guy that could go out and get two of them. And then, I love this. What is it?
Nintendo Switch.
That's what I'm talking about, Nintendo Switch. This guy would be all about going out and getting a couple of them. And then not only would he show you that he got a couple of them, he'd be very proud to rub it in your face that you don't have any, right? Just not a very nice guy. In fact, I'd say he's greedy. And I know that when I say the word greedy, some of you start to get a little uncomfortable, like, bro, this is your family member. Like, yeah, but he is. There's no other word. He's greedy. And he also is somebody that doesn't treat people very well. In fact, because of how rich he is, he loves to rub it in people's faces, and it doesn't matter who you are, including if you are one of his employees. And the reason I know that is from just hanging out, and I've been able to hear about he's just not a nice guy to work for. So there's not a whole lot of redeeming qualities about him necessarily, except that he's family, so I have to be around him, even though I don't want to. Well, he starts to share how people are constantly coming to him this time of year because he is a wealthy business owner. And so they hit him up for charitable donations this time of year, you know, like normal people do. And it's not the fact that he says no, it's how he makes them feel when he does it, right? It's just, he just makes you squirmy. It's not awesome. Well, he starts telling me about how he started to have these dreams, right? And so he's having these dreams, and he's visited by somebody that shows him what his life used to look like. Right? And he's looking back on his life, and he used to be a happy guy. I mean, most of us are not born grumpy jerks, right? Like, we learn that from somewhere. Same thing with him and how he's ruined every relationship, and he's able to kind of write it off because, look around, I've got everything I could ever want. Well, then he's visited by someone else who shows him, like, what's going on in his life right now. And he starts to see that the relationships that he has in his life are doomed because of the way he's treating them, but he's still able to just kind of move past it because, well, it is what it is, the cost of business doing business. Well, then he's visited by one more person who shows him what's going to come. right? And it shows that he's going to die alone. Alone. With no one there at his funeral. And the only people who really show up are there to take his stuff that he loves so much. Well, I hope by now that you've realized I'm not actually talking about one of my family members. So, you can take a chill knowing that the pastor's not up here just roasting his family member. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Scrooge from one of the greatest classics, A Christmas Carol. And while I was a school teacher, for those of you who don't know, I taught school for a very long time. And while I taught this every single year, and I absolutely loved it because of the light bulbs that went on with the kids that were in there, just from the lessons of watching this guy go from a complete grump to somebody who couldn't wait to give his things away, right? We're gonna spend some time talking about that today. But so there's been a lot of different versions. There's the play version that you can read if you're into that kind of thing. And then they made a bunch of movies. So here's one of them. How many of this is your favorite one? Like the OG right here. Okay, we got some hands. And then there's another one that came out. Jim Carrey did this animated thing. How many of this is your favorite one? This one's legit, man. My daughter Hannah and I just watched this last week while I was prepping for this message. And we got about halfway through and she's like, this is scary. Like, I don't like this. She's 17. It's not like she's five. But it was too much, so she didn't quite make it through. Then there's this one. How many of this is your favorite here? Yeah, see, all I can picture is X-Men. So I can't even get to the rest of the story. But obviously the best version of all time is Mickey Mouse. That's what I'm talking about. Let's go. So what was amazing to me is we can sit and we can talk about our favorite versions, but they're all really well done because many of them just go kind of line for line with what the play was actually written for, right? But what amazed me was, as I've been talking about this, how many people had no idea about the story at all? Yeah, Mark's getting old, I guess. Because there's a lot of people that I talked to trying to get some lines and some prep for that didn't know what it was. So I asked our video team, for those of you who don't know, I don't need to embarrass you. But if you don't know, you should be embarrassed. But for you, we put together a video that's going to tell this whole story in a minute and 20 seconds. Here you go.
This is a story about a man named Ebenezer Scrooge who lives in London. He is a greedy and mean-spirited moneylender who despises Christmas. But because it's Christmas Eve, he reluctantly gives his clerks, among them Bob Cratchit, the following day off. Just as Scrooge is about to enter his home for the evening, he sees the face of his old business partner Marley in the door knocker. This frightens him, but Scrooge shrugs it off and prepares for bed. Later that evening, Scrooge is visited by Marley's ghost, who warns him that in order to avoid an afterlife of torment, Scrooge will be visited by three ghosts. Scrooge can hardly sleep and the first ghost arrives on time. The ghost of Christmas past takes him to special memories of his childhood and young adult years, where he becomes so absorbed with making money that his fiancée leaves him. Scrooge is then returned back to his room and is later visited by the second ghost, the ghost of Christmas present. This jolly ghost takes him to the streets of London and shows him how normal people celebrate Christmas, including Scrooge's nephew Fred and his clerk Bob Cratchit. The Cratchits, although poor, make the most of what they have and are held together by the love of Tiny Tim, a small boy with a crutch. This trip to the present seems to revitalize Scrooge's outlook on Christmas. However, Scrooge is then visited by the third ghost, the ghost of Christmas future. This grim figure shows how others react to Scrooge's eventual death and portrays the Cratchits in the aftermath of Tiny Tim's death. Because of these signs, Scrooge vows to change and cherish Christmas. Scrooge is then returned to his bedroom and finds that it is Christmas morning. He buys a giant feast for the Cratchits and visits his nephew to celebrate Christmas. In the end, Scrooge becomes generous and loves Christmas.
New nominee for best version ever? Yeah, I know, that's a minute and 20 seconds of your life you're never getting back. It's terrible, but it does remind us of the entire story, right? It was a quick recap to go, oh yeah, I remember that. We can learn so much from this story of Scrooge. We can learn from his mistakes. And that's what we love about this story. That's what's timeless about this story. It's not necessarily that he was grumpy and that he was mean. It's the last 5 minutes of the movie. It's the redemption story. It's the fact that he got a second chance, that he was able finally for the first time in his life to see that the ones in his life were way more important than the things in his life. That's what we've been talking about over these past several weeks with this series, Avoiding Grinchmas. Don't avoid Christmas. Avoiding Grinchmas. The first week, we heard Ben talk about how we find joy when we go to the source, right? And then we heard Barb follow up last week with talking about how we can find joy even when we're dealing with a challenging time or with grief. And this week, we're going to spend some time talking about how we can be used to make a difference, even if we don't feel like it all the time. But what's funny about this story to me is that this story, when you read it and you relive it, it's never about you, is it? It's always about this guy I know. But if we're being honest, I feel like we all have a little bit of Scrooge in us, if you're being honest. Okay, so go back a couple of weeks, Black Friday. You went out shopping. I know you would never do this. Me, I was home with my family doing what I should do on Black Friday. But some of you were out shopping, and that's okay. And you saw a toy sitting on a shelf, made eye contact with another grown adult, and made a beeline for that thing because it was the last one and you just had to have it. All of a sudden, you just made out an enemy that you've never met before. You've got a little Grinch. For some of you, maybe it's the way that you drive on the highway. And I get it. There's a lot of people that just don't measure up to your driving expertise. I would know nothing about this. So I did realize that I actually need to change the way I drive when I'm on the way to church. Because it dawned on me, what if they follow me into church? They see me get out and then realize not only am I going to church, I'm the pastor here. So, okay, I've got a little work to do. I've got a little Grinch in me. Or maybe it's a cousin, a neighbor, a family member, that you don't necessarily see them as people. You start to see them as problems. Problems to be dealt with and not people to be loved. And so this whole series, we're stepping into how we can all get better at that. And it brings us to our bottom line for today. I truly, truly believe this, that we can change the world by sharing our joy. You can help change the world by sharing your joy. And so today I want to talk about three ways, three practical ways that we can share our joy, even though it may not come natural to us. The first one is this: you can share your joy by being a life-giving you. Now, we all have different versions of ourselves. Sometimes we're life-giving. Sometimes we're not. But in order to be a life-giving you, you have to be prepared. When Scrooge walked into a room, what happened to that room? Like, it doesn't matter the beginning of that, all the way up to his transformation, all of the life was just sucked out of that room. People were talking about him behind his back. Everybody stopped talking when he entered the room. It was not a good scene. How do people talk about you when you walk into a room? What effect do you have? How does the room respond? Are you needy? Are you attention seeking? Are you busy, always on the go? None of these things are inherently bad. It's just how we come across to other people and the voice that then allows us to step in. We read in Mark, it says this. It says, the apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and all they had taught. I want to stop for a second. I don't want to just skip by this word because I think it's important when we hear the word tour. Like, the word tour tells you they've been out there for a while, right? And you have to remember, they walked everywhere they went. And when you pull out the map and see where these guys were walking, it's crazy. And they weren't just walking and talking, like that's tiring enough, but the stuff that they were doing on their journey, this was a tour. This was an investment. And I think about this when I think about myself. Do we have any golfers in the house? Anybody golf? Right? I love when you ask that question because everybody does, like, I golf. I mean, it's fast how fast the hands go up. The difference between golfing 18 in a cart and golfing 18 walking, it might as well be a different sport. Because you're in a cart. I mean, you're ready to go. I'll do another 18. You walk it, and you're like, I don't ever want to do that again. It changes everything. So just think about this ministry tour that these guys were on. And it goes on. It says, then Jesus said, let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while. He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't have time to eat. You ever felt like that? In order to accomplish the mission that you're on, no matter what it is that's in front of you, you have to show up prepared. Part of that preparation is being rested. In order to be ready, you need to be rested. And he goes on. He says, are you overcommitted? He says, are you burnt out? He looks at them and says, are you exhausted? And then he sets the tone. He says, I'm going to be the one who goes off to rest. And I think sometimes you and I get caught up in watching this and what they do and not realizing that the Son of Man, the one who created everything, the one who knows all, needs to take time to rest. If he does, you probably do too. And so if you're not at that place right now, there's a chance that you will be again soon. And I know this time of year can be tough. And so my question is, do you have a built-in time of rest? Because if the answer is no, the chances are that you are going to fill that time with something else. If you're anything like me, I'm still figuring this out too. If you do not schedule a time to rest and to replenish, it will get filled with something else to do. So if you are going to change the world by sharing your joy, you need to show up as a life-giving you, and that starts with some rest. The second way that you can share your joy is through life-giving service. I love this quote. I don't know where it came from. I couldn't tell you if you paid me, but it's something that I lived by in my classroom when I was teaching. It wasn't necessarily something that I taught to the students. It was just a reminder that I gave myself as the educator every single day when I walked in that room. That people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And if there are any teachers in the house, you know exactly what I'm talking about, especially in middle school. You could be the best teacher, the smartest person in the room, and those kids will not care until they know that you care about them. And that is how we gain access into people's lives, is showing up and learning about them, who they are, where they come from, what they care about. That's what's so neat about this story about A Christmas Carol. It's that redemptive piece, and that nothing shook him until that last ghost came. And he saw he was going to die alone, and he started to change. He got a second chance to love and to serve the people around him. And we look at that and we go, man, I want that joy in my life. We read in Matthew, it says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Again, if anybody could have shown up and said, bow down, it is the one who created everything around him. And yet Jesus showed up with a towel over his arm and said, let me show you how to serve. That's why I love our church. Long before I was on this stage or a part of this campus staff, just as an attender, when I walked in this place, I could see immediately that this church cared about outreach. That's the church term for serving people. It starts with our dream team. You all encountered them when they came in, when you came in today. It's a group of people who have said, I want to serve those who show up to the campus each and every week. They waved to you on your way in the parking lot. They greeted you on your way in. They gave you something nice to drink and a snack to hang out with. They're the people that make you want to come back because of the smile and when they remember your faces and your names, and they make you feel like family. We also have something called Second Saturday Serve, where the second Saturday of every single month, we do something in the community to make sure that the organizations, the schools, individuals know that they matter to God and that they matter to us. You heard Caleb talk about that with shoeboxes, and you guys were all a part of that. You did that. You made the difference when we showed up to that school and were able to go, man, we hope each and every one of you get to experience the love of Jesus this Christmas, and we hope that this helps just a little bit. And the third thing that we do really, really well around here is mission trips. It's something that I have been passionate about ever since I went on my very first one. My first mission trip was to Honduras, and it changed my life forever because there's something special that happens when you are taken away from your family, your friends, your support system, and you are out there experiencing something that you will never be able to experience it again. You can't share it with your loved ones, and yet God is saying, trust me in the process. It's a gift. This past year, I was able to lead a team down to the Dominican Republic. And while we were there, we met Juana. Juana was one of the sweetest little old ladies that I could ever meet. And I have to love her because look how tall she makes me. Look, that's so fantastic. I mean, I'm not as short as Andy, but I'm not winning any height contests. But she was just the sweetest woman. And through an interpreter, she was sharing how this house that she was living in, every night she would try to fall asleep to the sound of termites and cockroaches eating her house. And that was her life. There was no hope that that was ever going to change. And then a group of people showed up. And we tore that house down. And the rubble that sat in that pile was something that you and I would not use to build a shed to keep our lawnmower in. You sit there and you talk to her about how much she is appreciative and how she was thanking us every step of the way for us serving. And we just sat there and said, look, this is not us. We're just trying to show up and show you that Jesus loves you. And we connected her to her own local church right there. So they were the ones who were the connectors. We were just the workers. And as we worked through the week, and as these relationships grew, you could see her getting more and more excited, thinking about what was to come. And when the foundation was done, we carved this into the foundation with a stick. Because I knew that someday I was going to get the chance to come up here, to stand on this stage, to look you directly in the eye and say thank you. Because when you trust God with your finances and you give back to Him through Cedar Creek Church, you are investing in the lives of people that you may never meet this side of heaven. But trust me, Juana loves you. She's so thankful for you. Not just because of the house, but because while we were there, we were building relationships. We were able to show up and show the people of this community that we love them. Guys, this was in a leprosy colony. Did you even know that's still a thing in this world? Outcasts that a group of strangers showed up to love and to serve. And because of that, because of you, Juana now has a new house that she is moving into just before Christmas this year. That's right. That's what life-giving service looks like. And so if you don't see yourself in this picture, it's okay. You were there. You were there because you were with us. You were supporting us. You were giving us the ability to go serve somebody else. And those words that we read in Matthew, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. That's why we do what we do. And why it's so fun to be a part of it. Because in everything we do, we roll out the red carpet to make sure that every single person feels loved, even if just for an hour each week. So they feel loved. So that you know that you matter to God and that you matter to us. If you want to be a part of what's going on around here, if you want to give your life and help serve those outside of your comfort zone, there are many opportunities around here. And once you do, you will firmly see that you can change our world by sharing your joy. The final thing that I want to talk about today is that you can share your joy by using life-giving words. Came across this quote while getting ready for this message by Blaise Pascal. It said, "Kind words do not cost much, yet they accomplish much." And the more I chewed on this, the more I thought about it, the truer it became, and the more that I started to do some inventory in my life, both of things that have been said to me and things that I've said to other people. Because here's the really hard part. While that's the positive side of it, there's a negative side too. Because mean words don't cost us much, but man, they're costly on the other end. Has anybody said something to you years ago that you remember, either positive or negative? Has anybody ever said anything that just stuck with you? The negative one that I went through, I keep playing over and over in my head. And it attacks me every time that I stand on a stage and try to give a message. Because I was told you will never be a communicator in front of people. And that self-doubt, it sticks with me. But so do the other ones, right? One of the coolest things I ever heard in my life was when my dad looked at me and he said, "Mark, my favorite thing about you is watching you be a dad." And then he gave me a couple of reasons why. Specific things that he has seen in my life of me just being a dad that I learned from him. And I'm going to hold on to those because that was a gift. But I can tell you, since his passing, those words have never meant more. Words can be a gift. What was the words that Scrooge was known for? Bah humbug. What does that even mean? Does anybody know? That's what I'm saying. We don't really know what it means, but we know it's not good. What words do you want to be known for? Do you want to be known for spreading words of joy? Or do you want to be known for spreading words of hate? We're reminded in Proverbs, it says, gentle words are a tree of life. A deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. So our words can be a tree of life, or they can crush a spirit. Again, in Proverbs, we read that the tongue can bring death or life. Those who love to talk will reap the consequences. Our words can bring death or life. The second part I'm not a big fan of. I love to talk. But what does that really say? Because I could sit for hours and talk sports, movies, faith. I love to argue. Ask my friends. But it's just that reminder of, if that's you, it's not a bad thing. Just be careful of your words. They carry weight. People remember what you say, positive or negative. We hang on to words. Are your words a gift or are they crushing? One of the most thought-provoking verses that I've read in the Bible comes from James. Well, James was the brother of Jesus. Anybody have siblings? Because I can tell you right now that if one of my sisters came forward and said, "I am the Son of God," I would spend my entire life making sure people know that they weren't. So when James says, "Trust in Jesus," it should hit different for us. And he gives us this warning. He says, "We put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us. We can turn the whole animal." Or take ships as an example. Although they are large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder. Makes it go wherever the pilot wants it to go. Likewise, the tongue is a very small part of our body, yet it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. What? James is just looking at us and saying, "Guys, I need you to pay attention, and this is big. Your words are powerful. Use them to be a gift. So how can I use my words to spread joy?" Well, I'm glad you asked. Number one, pray for others. Now, if you've been around here for a while, you've heard me stand up here many, many times and say that there is no wrong way to pray, right? Well, while preparing for this, I learned that that's not true. There is definitely a right way to pray. You have to do it. Looking at somebody and saying, I'll pray for you, and not following up doesn't do anybody any good. But when you look at somebody and you say, I'll pray for you, and you follow up, and you are on bended knee on their behalf, praying to a God who loves them, you can help change their life by simply praying on their behalf. It's why I set an example when I lead a men's group. If you didn't know this, men don't love sitting around in groups talking about their most personal stuff together. So I challenge them to just, on a card, write down your name, write down your prayer request. We're going to toss them in the middle. We're going to shuffle them up, and then you're going to grab one, and you're going to pray for that guy for the next 7 days. It's a great idea, right? Unless you lose the card. Unless you throw it away. Unless you leave it on the table. So you have to take that card and put it somewhere that you're going to see it. That's why as soon as I leave that group, I put it on my dashboard. And it's a reminder. Why? Because while I'm cutting people off all week, I can be praying for my brother. Because I'm behind the wheel a lot. And that simple reminder of, hey, be praying for them today. Number two, encourage others specifically. You've already heard the words and how they impacted me that my dad gave me, that gift that my dad gave me. Encourage people specifically. I think sometimes we want to do that, and for whatever reason, we just don't. Like, we see somebody doing something awesome, we're like, man, that's really cool. I should tell them, and then you walk away. Tell them. Encourage them. Allow them to know, I see what you're doing over here. I see the impact that you're making, and I just want you to know, that's awesome. Keep doing it. You inspire me to be a better person. People need to hear this. Even something as simple as an outfit, don't hold on to compliments from people. Be specific. Tell them that you notice. Number three, and maybe the most important, is to invite people. It's not about inviting them to Cedar Creek, so don't, please don't hear me say that. It's about inviting them to be a part of a life-giving church. A church that allows people to see that Jesus loves them, no matter what they look like, no matter what they've done, no matter what they're trapped in right now, that there's a God who loves them more than they can imagine. And if this is your first time here, I am glad that you're here, and I hope that you hear that message. If you've been here for a while, there's a reason you keep coming back. It's because you probably connected with a few people who talk about the source of joy, which is Jesus. And it's pretty tough not to be inspired when there is a group of people who are moving closer and closer and closer to what Jesus asks of us. And when we trust him, he gives us the hope that we can only find in him. And we have a joy that can only come from a relationship with Jesus. And when we enter in that relationship, it delights the heart of the Father. We read in Hebrews, because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross. Because of the joy awaiting him, Jesus endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Now, what was the joy that was awaiting him? It was you. Because Jesus knew that when he took the cross and when he defeated it and when he made it no longer shameful, that he provided a way for you to have a way back to the Father because he loves you so much. Do you get that? Jesus endured the cross for you. And so this invite this week as we step into Christmas, it means more because people are a little more willing to accept that invite. So who is it that needs to be sitting next to you at Christmas? And please don't tell my bosses I said this. But if it's not here, that's okay. Take them to another life-giving church. I'd love it to be here, and I'd love for you to introduce them to me. But I'd rather have you introduce them to Jesus. The joy that was awaiting him. The power to change the world. You see, because you and I, we are God's plan A, and there is no plan B. It's not just about accepting Jesus so you get to go to heaven. Awesome, great. It's also because he wants you to realize who you are while you're here and how he wants to use you to change the world by spreading your joy. So how do you do that? By being a life-giving you, through life-giving service, and using life-giving words. So what area is it that God has challenged you in you this morning? Because I have a feeling that many of you are sitting there going, you know exactly where God is asking you to take the next step. So we want to provide some time for you to be able to think through that and see exactly what it looks like. So we're just going to take 2 minutes, and I want you to reflect on these questions. Who can I encourage? Who has God put in front of me that I need to share some encouragement with? Who can I serve? Where can I take myself out of my comfort zone and step in to open-handedly serve someone else with no expectation on the other end? And who can I invite? So over these next 2 minutes, we're going to dim the lights, and we're going to give you some time to just sit and spend between you and your Heavenly Father.